on House Bill 2280. Teresa, you want to brief us on this?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. House Bill 2280 removes the current statutory requirement that the public employee's retirement system perform a biennium review of retirement benefits provided by a public employer to public officers and firefighters if the employer provides a different retirement benefits program. It establishes that the public employee's retirement system shall execute such reviews at times that may be established by board rule at the expense of the public employer.
Okay, good. And Steve Delaney from the department. And Steve, just get to one side or the other. I'm going to call the other folks up too. And Brian DeLashmet and Maria Keltner. And then Steve, would you just plan on just staying right there? That way you won't be jumping up and down. All right, Mr. Delaney, if you would give us...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what you're hearing today are actually seven different bills, all introduced at the request of the PERS board. The PERS board had directed staff to find ways to simplify the plan where possible. They basically came out to be housekeeping in nature. There aren't fiscals attached to them. We worked with the Legislative Advisory Committee, which was a committee created at the end of reform in 2003, directing that a body equally composed of labor and employer representatives work with us and developing these. So all seven concepts have been approved by that committee as the PERS board was reviewing them. The first one you have in front of you then is House Bill 2280. There is a provision in law that allows public employers that are providing police or fire benefits that if their benefits are higher than what would be provided through PERS, they may remain outside of the PERS plan. In the testimony you have in front of you, you'll see there are 10 employers currently that are providing equal to or better than plans and are outside of the PERS plan. Prior to reform in 03, PERS had a rule that simply said any time an employer's plan that was equal to or better than dropped its benefit levels, we would study it to find out if it was still equal to or better than. Or vice versa, if the PERS plan ever increased its benefits, we would study plans to see if they were still qualified or not. During reform in 03, there was a mandatory provision added stating just every 2 years, PERS board, you should study this. And we did do a study at that time and found that these 10 continued to be equal to or better than. It is an expense, however, to those employers to have this study conducted. And working with our actuary, we determined that there really isn't any need just to do it every 2 years if nothing has changed. It seems like it was just sort of an exercise in a study without having any real purpose. So we are asking here to remove the mandatory nature of the study. You retain the directive, the statutory directive, that they must maintain a plan that is equal to or better than PERS, and it will allow us by rule once again to specify when that would occur. Our plan is to work through the administrative rules. Actually, our administrative rules exist as currently that would state, or will state that point, that if there's a change in the employer's plan lowering benefits, we would study it. If there's a change in the PERS plan increasing benefits, we would study it. I'm certainly available to answer any questions.
I guess for my own edification here, if the person, the employee is outside of PERS, why does the PERS board even care? Explain to me why we're interested in those pension plans.
Mr. Chair, it's only because it was a statutory requirement years ago. I don't have the history to tell you when it first came in. Mm-hmm. I will say that this requirement does not apply, for instance, to general service members. There are many employers that do not have general service members in PERS and are not required to bring them in or to produce benefits that are equal to or better than. But the legislature was concerned about police and fire. Mm-hmm. And did direct by statute that that a entity that provided police and fire services must provide benefits that were equal to or better than PERS.
And I understand why we're concerned about someone having a pension. We want retired folks to live a decent life. But okay, thank you. Mr. DeLashmet, please. Oh, excuse me. Are there any questions of Mr. Delaney? Out of the gate. Okay, Mr. DeLashmet.
For the record, Brian DeLashmet, representing the Oregon Council of Police Associations. For those of you who don't know the OCPA, it's basically the line officers and deputy sheriffs, police officers, parole and probation officers, and community corrections officers that participate at the local level in a collective bargaining union at that point, and then come together, and we represent them in the Capitol building in a number of issues. I'm here today to offer an amendment to this bill, and let me just step back for a minute. I've handed out Some of the best testimony I've ever seen in the building was testimony in which there was a very clear diagram. And I learned that very quickly that there was a problem with pay and nurses one time, and somebody in Ways and Means drew a diagram and said, work, arrow, pay, and held it up, and it explained the whole situation. Well, I'm going to attempt to do that with this diagram, but let me go back just for a minute. Mr. Chair, you asked a very valid question about why do we care? Well, it's my understanding that back in 1975, I think, is when the Equal to or Better was put in statute. And it has been the policy of this state that if an employer, a police or fireman, does not participate in the PERS plan, that their plan would be reviewed and had to be equal to or better than the PERS plan. And if you go back and look at how it started out, and you look at historical, so let's start with historical on this sheet. When there was only one PERS plan, it was Tier 1, and you had a non-PERS employer, then they looked at that and said, okay, is it equal to or better than that? And it was approved. If they didn't, then they, in fact, had to make some improvements. Then came Tier 2 in 1996. Complicated a little bit. It's my understanding that they still reviewed the non-PERS plan against the Tier 1 and Tier 2 plans. So now we're at the current evaluation. And in 2005, when they did the evaluation, this is what brings up my amendment, is that we now have three plans. We have Tier 1, Tier 2, and OPSERP. And so you have those 10 jurisdictions out there.
And Mr. Delaney, just spell out what OPSERP is for everybody.
The Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, often referred to as Tier 3.
Okay, thanks.
We still call it Tier 3. Post-2003, we now have the OPSERP plan, which is in each one of the tiers has, in fact, dropped back benefits to a certain extent, and the retirement ages and the qualifications and so forth. So now you have, in the 2005 evaluation of those 10 jurisdictions that Mr. Delaney mentioned, you have an evaluation of the non-PERS plan of those 10 employers, and they're comparing it currently under the standards that they use to the OPSERP plan, which is the lowest common denominator of the three plans. So regardless of whether somebody had been, you had all veteran officers that otherwise would have been in Tier 1, and you're comparing Tier 1 to Tier 1, you're now comparing that plan to the lowest common denominator. And so if you turn the sheet over, I just explained how it works. You could have a group of veteran officers that otherwise, if they'd have been for a PERS employer in Tier 1, and they're being compared after 2003 to OPSERP. My amendment, how it works, and we did have some discussion, Mr. Delaney and I, about the language, but this was coming from Dave Hendricks in Legislative Council, what we were attempting to do, and I think there's no disagreement as to what we're attempting and whether this language actually does it or not. We're trying to set up a system in which you really have apples-to-apples comparison. So if you have veteran officers that would have historically, if they'd been in PERS plan, been in Tier 1, you're comparing them to the local plan that's Tier 1. And for those officers that would have been, if they'd hired into a PERS plan that would have been Tier 2, you're comparing that group of employees to that plan. And for the new employees after 2003, you're comparing them to the OPSERP plan. So it really is an apples-to-apples comparison. The problem you have at this point is that the 2005 evaluation showed these very exaggerated comparisons of 189%. You know, you have a local jurisdiction that's 189% of the PERS plan. Well, they're comparing to OPSERP. And so we were just looking for by class so that, in fact, you have apples to apples. And you're not, in fact, then encouraging local jurisdictions to back off on the retirement that they had for veteran officers that had been serving for a number of years prior to that. So that's, in essence, what I'm attempting to do with the dash ones. We have, for the record, do not have a problem with taking it with the main text of the bill and not having a two-year review and doing it periodically. I know that's been in and out of the law a couple times. Senator Minnis, when he was the chair of a committee on that side and had an issue with the Portland police pension, put the two-year plan in there, is my recollection. That was his addition to the PERS plan. We don't have a problem with it, but we want to make sure that whenever it's reviewed, it's apples to apples all the way across. Thank you.
Representative Escobar.
Yes, understand what you're saying, and I agree 100% with what you are laying out, that we need to compare with the Tier 1s and the Tier 2s and then the OPSR as is today. What triggers this, though? I mean, let's say we're 10 years down the line. What triggers this to bring it forth instead of, it's more or less, we're turning it kind of into a permissive.
Yeah, again, Mr. Chair, Senator Esquivel, that was one of the problems with having as a periodic review, and that's why Senator Menas wanted it as a two-year review. And Mr. Delaney can answer the question. From their perspective, it's when the PERS plan changes or when the local plan changes, then there would be a comparison at that point. I think that's probably still fine with us as far as a periodic trigger. But again, we're still just trying to compare the apples to apples.
Anything to add, Mr. Green?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, just to give you an example, when Tier 2 came into place, that did not trigger a review because PERS was lowering the benefits at the time, so it was not seen as disqualifying plans that previously received an equal to or better than certification from the board.
Right. Ms. Keltner, please.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Maria Keltner. I'm here today representing the Association of Oregon Counties. And we do not have a problem with House Bill 2280 as introduced. I just got the amendments, talked with Brian out in the hall just before this hearing started. I have a few concerns about understanding the details and need to get back in touch with the finance officers and administrators of the four counties that I represent as part of the Association of Oregon Counties. Wanted to make sure that you knew that right up front. One of the concerns that we had with the every two-year testing is that some of these counties, Wheeler County probably being the definitely being the smallest, was saying $25,000 to run a test every 2 years that we know we're going to pass because we haven't changed anything and the test already said we were equal to or better than Tier 1, we could have hired another deputy. So we wholly support the elimination of doing the testing when there's not a change in either plan.
Great. Well, and just for the record, we're just having a hearing, and we'll have another public hearing before the work session, too, so people can come and hear.
Just for the record, Brian DeLashman again, we would support them hiring another deputy.
Right.
Yes, of course. Thank you very much. So get together with these nice folks and see if we can square it all away.
Thank you.
Any other questions before these folks? All righty then. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2280 and open a hearing on 2281. And all I have signed up for this is Mr. Delaney, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of PERS. House Bill 2281 is simply to clarify that when a member withdraws from PERS, now this isn't retirement, but this is pre-retirement, the member for some reason or another has separated and wants to withdraw their dollars from PERS, we would like the statute to state that they must withdraw all their account dollars from PERS. We've had some complications because members will withdraw their Tier 1, but leave their individual account program there, and then later want to return as a member, and we're kind of up in the air as to what kind of member are they? Do they serve another waiting time? It's just cleaner for us. If when a member chooses to withdraw from the system, they withdraw all dollars within the system and start anew if they are to come back in another PERS-covered employment. And again, this was approved by the Legislative Advisory Committee as well as the PERS Board.
All right. Any questions? Well, no one signed up, so I'd assume all is happy in the valley on this one. And I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2281 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2282. Mr. Delaney, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of PERS. House Bill 2282, notice of contest, this is truly a very minor housekeeping issue. When a member receives their retirement benefit from PERS and wants to determine if it's correct, they receive a notice of entitlement, and if they don't like what they see there, they can submit, according to statute, a notice of contest. Well, the only way after a notice of contest for a member to get further resolution is to go to the circuit court. That's what the statute states. But members see this title, notice of contest, and think they can go through the contested case process provided under administrative rules. So to get rid of that confusion, we'd like to change the title from notice of contest to notice of dispute, so that for the member, there's no confusion. If they disagree with their benefit, the statutory provision remains in place. You challenge it and move on to circuit court. You do not go through the administrative contested case process.
All righty then. Any questions for Mr. Delaney on this one? And the same thing for this one. Everyone's been paying close attention to this. There's no one else signed up to testify. So we're just going to move on. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2282 and open a hearing on House Bill 2283. And before you get going, Mr. Delaney, I'm going to call Kate Cooper Richardson up, please. And go ahead, Mr. Delaney.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, Steve Delaney with Oregon PERS. 2283 is to stop a mandatory provision of law that's to come into effect this October 1 of 2007, which would require that one member of the PERS board serve on the Oregon Investment Council. The pressures on the board members currently, they use a lot of their time on the PERS board. To ask them to also spend an equal amount of time on the Oregon Investment Council would be very difficult to find a volunteer for that, and could make it very difficult for the governor to find someone that would be mandated into that. So we were wanting to simply withdraw the mandatory nature of that. The governor would still have the opportunity to appoint a board member if he so chose and if they were willing, but it wouldn't be mandated. Now, with that, Kate's here because we have discovered that there's actually an addition problem in this particular concept. On line 14 of 2283, we really want to state that four members appointed on the committee should have investment background. The Treasurer would really prefer that to be the standard for all members of the committee. That was what was intended, but when we withdrew the lines 16 through 17, the addition got off in the drafting.
Okay. Kate, why don't you go ahead, please?
Sure. For the record, Kate Cooper Richardson, Chief of Staff of the State Treasurer. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm actually here to testify in favor of this bill in that we were all in agreement on that, but we did notice this little change. Part of the confusion here is because the part of the statute that it's amending here is really almost like a footnote, because it doesn't become effective until October 1st, 2007 anyway. And the current state of the law says that the governor shall appoint four voting members who must be qualified by training and experience. And while we agree that it doesn't need to be mandatory to have a crossover member, we would still like to have all four members be qualified by training and experience.
Okay, just so you know, we'll have to get an official amendment. We're not doing conceptual amendments in this committee, period, for any reason, no matter how simple they are. We're not going to do that. So just whenever, and they're real busy, so whenever we get that, we'll take care of that.
Very well.
Any questions? All righty then. And I know how hard it is. I know exactly how hard and time-consuming it is to volunteer on anything. And we're trying to get folks to participate. Last thing we want to do, especially people this skill level, we want to make sure there's lots of opportunity to participate, and that we're not killing them for nothing. So, all righty then. Thank you. Thank you very much. If there's nothing else on that, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2283. No questions?
No.
And open a hearing on House Bill 2284.
I'm just in amazement.
Me too. Okay, Mr. Delaney, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, for the record, Steve Delaney with PERS. 2284 was actually a concept that was brought forward by the Legislative Advisory Committee to the board and requested that the board sponsor this. It is an exception to the break-in-service rule. You may recall break-in-service is something that came out of the 2003 reform legislation that states that if a person has gone for more than 6 months upon return, they come under the new plan, the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan. What employers and labor were encountering were situations where a member may be terminated for one reason or another. They go through arbitration, and arbitration directs that they be restored to their original position. That paperwork comes to PERS, and we cannot comply. Because a break in service has occurred, we cannot put them back in Tier 1. So this would state that there is an exception to the break in service rule if, and you'll notice the language there on the second page, it's lines 28 and 29. If the person is subsequently reinstated with a public employer pursuant to a judgment, an administrative order, a settlement, or other resolution of the challenge. So we really do leave it to the employer and the member to bring to come together in resolution and notify PERS by some sort of documentation as what to us occur, and we would use that documentation then to restore the individual.
Any questions for Mr. Delaney on this one? And then I'm going to ask you to just take a seat and not go very far. And I'm going to call Jim Green, Mary Botkin, and Joe DiNicola, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. Welcome to PERS.
Yeah.
I think Mary and I both sit on the PERS Board Legislative Advisory Committee, and this was an issue that was brought before that committee by me. We had an issue that occurred in the Lebanon School District where 10 individuals of that school district were dismissed, and it went up through the courts, went up on appeal, and it was found that the school district had not appropriately dismissed those folks. The court order or the arbiter's order came back and said, you need to restore them to their full function as an employee in that school district. We couldn't do that because of the break in service. And we want to be able to comply with those orders. PERS gets those orders back, and they have to say, look, it's a break in service. Sorry, we can't do that. And we need to be able to do that in order to be in compliance with these orders. This affects some other folks besides the Lebanon, and I think Mary and the individual from SEIU may speak about that. But we believe this takes care of the last issue we have to deal with break in service as an exception. Mary may be bringing a different idea before this body, but we can talk about that when that idea gets here. But we are in support of this. The PERS Employer Alliance, which includes League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon County, Special Districts Association, support this measure.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And many of you may recall when you were children the pinky swear rule. Jim Green and I have a pinky swear rule on this bill, and that is that while he may not support other issues around break and service, this one we are in agreement on. Our situation was very similar to what Jim is talking about. I'm not going to dwell on it a lot. We had a corrections officer who was dismissed because of the location of his employment and the difficulties we had in getting mediation and arbitration taken care of for him. It took us over a year to get him reinstated. He got reinstated with full back pay and full status, as if he'd never been gone, everywhere but except PERS. And he ended up in OPSERP. And he had been an officer long enough to be in Tier 1 PERS. And so this raised its ugly head as a problem, and Jim was having about the same problem in Lebanon, and I'll let SEIU speak for themselves. I think that this will resolve that issue, and it will restore people as the courts or the arbitrators sort of determine that they ought to be restored. And when somebody's found to be, you know, innocent, they ought to be innocent. And with that, we would encourage you to pass this bill, and I'll agree with Jim. We'll talk about the rest of breaking services another time.
And we look forward to that.
And we don't have a pinky swear on that
one. Okay, right. We're just swearing, right? All right, Mr. DiNicola, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Joe DiNicola, president of SEIU Local 503 OPEU. I'm here today on behalf of more than 40,000 represented workers in the state of Oregon to testify in support of HB 2284. As Mary and Jim have explained, HB 2284 addresses one of the unintended consequences of the break in service legislation passed back in 2003. And again, Jim and Mary have explained how those provisions work. But under HB 2284, when a worker, when there is a judgment, settlement, or administrative ruling that resolves a challenge on behalf of a worker who's been unjustly terminated, PERS status will be restored for those workers. And this bill is going to impact a relatively small number of Oregon workers, but in particular, there's one group of SEIU-represented workers that I'd like to talk about. 4 years ago, more than 300 custodians from the Portland Public Schools District were removed from service, terminated by their employer. The workers challenged that termination, and under subsequent court order, their employment rights were restored. Many are now back on the job. HB 2284 ensures that those workers, those Portland school custodians, will not lose their right to continue to participate in the PERS pension plan. Again, the custodians suffered this break in service through no fault of their own. The Oregon Supreme Court determined their rights were violated, and again, passage of this bill will ensure that their pension rights are also restored. I urge the committee to support HB 2284, and again, this will allow for fair resolution and restoration of benefits for these workers. Thank you.
Yeah, and that subject hopefully won't come to this committee.
Can I also make a, yes, sort of a clarifying, just so the committee, because you have a lot of members on this committee that have not dealt with PERS before. When you look at PERS, you need to think of it as a large system, all-encompassing. And it really doesn't matter whether you return to your original employer. If you return to an employer who is a PERS-covered employer, then you would be covered as well. So as in one case that we have, one of the janitors in Portland ended up in one of our units in the city of Portland and was concerned that because he had not returned to his original employer, he wouldn't be covered. And we had to explain to him that, yes, as long as you return to a PERS-covered employer under that order, you are covered under the order, and this bill would cover you. And so that's a good thing.
And just for the record, I'm glad those folks are reinstated. I'm glad the courts agreed with people. I'm not even a lawyer, but these courts tend to agree with me on some of these PERS issues, which it's another conversation altogether. But anybody want any questions?
I just had a quick question. I just want to make sure for the record that this restores, this goes backwards retroactively, so it does restore everybody. Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is purely an issue of fairness.
Mm-hmm.
If they were wrongfully terminated from an employer's point of view, which you probably are sitting here going, geez, employers and unions are holding their hands here together on this bill, it's an issue of fairness. It really is. If we mistreated them and they were dismissed improperly and they are being restored, mm-hmm, then they need to be fully restored.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Any other questions? And why don't you all let Mr. Delaney come on up here? I would like to know how many employees are in this situation, if you have that. If you don't, if you can get it.
I can get it.
Thank you, folks.
My understanding is it's approximately 20 individuals currently that we have orders that we have not been able to implement the orders because of this issue. I have not heard on the final as far as the janitor.
I understand.
What I want to bring to the committee's attention, Mary is correct that the system is a system. I need to get the policymakers to direct me. Line 28 of this bill would not restore an individual going to any public employer, but we can change that with a single word, and I need to get that direction. Line 28 states, the person is subsequently reinstated with the public employer. So if we change that to A, it does indeed cover any return to any public employer, allows the order to be instituted.
And once again, I personally have no problem with that. I don't speak for the entire committee, but we're not going to conceptually change anything, ever. So go get an amendment.
I will absolutely work on that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for anybody? All right, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2284 and open a hearing on House Bill 2285. Please, Mr. Delaney.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Steve Delaney with Oregon PERS. House Bill 2285 is a housekeeping bill at the request of our staff. When a person retires from PERS, they have many different options in which they can draw out their benefits. One of them is to take all of their money out. They can take both their member dollars as well as an employer match and leave the system completely. Statute has said that generally these people cannot return to public employment for 6 months. But there is this loophole in the law that talks about, well, unless you're called a casual, seasonal, or emergency worker, It's led to a lot of confusion on the part of employers trying to find out whether or not a person fits that. It also comes down to whether you're in the know or not to be able to work with your employer to get this. Just to make it easier for everybody, we want to say, if you take a total lump sum, you're gone for 6 months. At the end of 6 months, you can return to public employment. That is what 2285, it's closing that loophole.
Any questions on this one? And once again, I'd assume since everyone who has any advocates in this building are paying attention, that this is okay with everyone, and that's good. If there are no more questions on that, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2285, open a public hearing on House Bill 2286.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Steve Delaney with Oregon PERS. 2286 deals with not the PERS plan, but with the Oregon Savings Growth Plan, which is also administered by the PERS board. It is a deferred comp program that is a subset under the PERS umbrella. This concept is to bring that plan into comporting with existing federal law. Presently, under PERS, or Oregon Savings Growth Plan statute, for alternate payees, that is when a member divorces and a spouse is given their alternate account, presently, Oregon Savings Growth Plan statute does not allow them to draw out those dollars earlier than the member can draw out their dollars, even though they may have a quadro or some other divorce decree that directs that they get their dollars earlier. Federal law allows that. It's simply the wording of existing state statute does not. So this would conform with federal statute, allow us to conform with the quad or direction to let the alternate payee draw out their dollars earlier. And it similarly makes a change to tax reporting so that clearly the alternate payee is taking care of their dollars in account and it's not being mixed with the member's requirements. Again, housekeeping, we have not had any opposition to it.
All righty then. Any questions? Once again, just for the record, I imagine everyone, advocates, employers and employees have been following this carefully, and everybody's happy with this one. Good. There are no questions then, correct? Well, hearing no questions, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2286. Thank you, Mr. Williams. And unless there's anything else, comments, questions, concerns for the good of the order, I'm going to adjourn the House Business Labor Committee.